home like 1830s English, and these kind of like piles of sacred stones. It's called cairns. So I don't know if that's anything to do with that city up north. It's like a pile of stones or something. Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankara Vavahai Tejasvi Navahi Namastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Okay, so then, okay, so that here on the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary, so let Samkirtan, the total and perfect chanting of Krishna's holy name, be victorious. The experience of something mundane can only be incomplete, but the transcendental plane is never touched by material nature. Therefore, by the discussion of transcendental subject matter, Krishna, the supreme subject, one experiences all supramundane perfection. Amongst these perfections are seven that are especially invoked by chanting Lord Krishna's holy name, as explained in this verse by Lord Chaitanya. Okay, so then this will be, Samkirtan cleanses the heart, Samkirtan extinguishes the fire of material existence, Samkirtan spreads the rays of the benediction moon, Samkirtan is the life of all transcendental knowledge, Samkirtan expands the ocean of transcendental bliss, Samkirtan awards the cooling shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, Samkirtan completes all other processes of bhakti. So on cleansing the heart, the chanting of Lord Krishna's holy name acts as a purifying agent upon the mirror of the living entity's contaminated hearts. The heart of the conditioned soul is completely covered over by three impurities: the desire to lord over matter, the godless attitude of being the sole enjoyer and or renouncer of the fruits of one's actions, and atheism. These three treacherous contaminations form a sheath that covers the mirror of consciousness, causing one to reject his true nature as a jiva. Krishna's holy name alone frees the consciousness of these impurities. By constantly chanting and thus taking complete shelter of the holy name, the jiva gradually perceives the reflection of his original form as a servant of Lord Krishna in the mirror of his consciousness. Right? So these three coverings, then here this desire to lord it over, the controller or the enjoyer or renouncer of the fruits. Right? Because that also is there. Sometimes we think, I am also the renouncer. And then we think, yeah, well, that's spiritual. But it's not. It's that if I'm the enjoyer, you know, and I'm the renouncer, that still means, you know, we're thinking we're separate from God. Right? In other words, I'm not the controller, or I'm not the lord of the material nature, Krishna is. And then according to my quota, I engage that in Krishna's service. Or whatever enjoyment or renunciation is there, that's also by Krishna's grace. Right? And then through his mercy, then we engage in those too. So these are the common. And the other is atheism. We just don't see God at all. Right? It means the first one, we may be overcome by material. We may be theistic, we may be devotional, but we are overwhelmed by, you know, material desire. So we still think I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? But here, then, atheism means even that's not even a question. You know, it's just there is no God. Right? So the first one, to me, God, but there's still the covering that I'm still the controller and enjoyer separate from God. Does that make sense? Yeah. So these are points that come up as, you know, special that he's adding here. Yes.
And a bit more on the renouncing part of
it. Renouncing, because it, let us just say, you're going through somebody else's locker, find something you like, and then you decide it's not so nice, so you renounce it and give it to someone else because it's not important to you. Can you do that?
No.
So that's the whole point. Is if everything by the Ishvashya principle is belonging to God, then it's not ours to renounce. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is renunciation indicates it's mine in the first place. Then I give it up. You understand? That's the difference between renunciation and sannyas. Sannyas is it's not mine in the first place. Right? But I act still to get a result. Renunciation is I act to get a result. It's my result. I give it up for a higher purpose. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, renunciation is recommended in the beginning because one has this sense of proprietorship. Right? We think it's mine. My work, the results from my work is mine. Right? But then Krishna points out is that you have a right to do your duty because everyone means anything will be gained only through your duty. Right? So no one has the right to take away your duty. But don't think you're the cause of the action. Don't think that the action, the result is yours. And don't think that you don't need to do your duty. Right? Because if you don't do any duties, no results will come, so there'll be no benefits, there'll be no elevation, right? There'll be no purification. So the action has to be done, but you can't think that you're the cause of it or that the result is yours. Right? I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. So if I'm the enjoyer, I'm the doer, then I get the result, so I'm the enjoyer. But I can also renounce that, right? I can give in charity or I can, you know, give it all away, whatever it is, but something is given up, you know, either from the angle of I'm just giving it up or I'm sharing it with others as charity, you know what I'm saying? But something is there. So in the beginning that's good, because since we have the attitude that it's mine, then to part with it means I have to be doing that for some higher purpose, right? There must be some, because I'm fruitive, I'm going to only give it up if there's some benefit. So that benefit then is spiritual. It's something uplifting. Or at least it's pious, right? I do nice work and good and that. I'll be elevated. I'll get better facility, move to higher regions, something, right? Or get freed from the material contamination. So it doesn't. It's a better step rather than I'm doing it just for myself. I'm doing it and I'm doing, you know, with this, engaging in work that's more pious, so I'm getting a better result, a more elevating result, rather than I'm just getting the facility I want. You know what I'm saying? Fruitive, I'm getting my facility. Then this renunciation, I'm getting something higher, like that. But still, that has that fruitive element, right? So now, giving it away, then you're... It's why it's considered better, even though technically it's the same thing, is that the idea that I will perform this work without a desire for myself, but only for the other person's satisfaction, that's the stage you're trying to get to. So it's a step in that direction. You understand? You know, so that's not... So even though one may not be doing a perfect job at it, it's still moving in that direction. Right? So now if that's connected to Krishna, then that's what we're looking for. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's just pious and nice, and you're not going to get out of the material world anyway with that kind of attitude. Right? But for the devotee, it means because it's useful for the devotee, therefore it's recommended for everybody. Right? In other words, what's good for devotees is what's recommended for everybody, whether they're a devotee or not, to perform. Right? Because what a devotee does is what pleases Krishna. Right? But the main point of pleasing Krishna is the mood in which it's done for Krishna. Right? So in other words, you're performing your duty, right? From the formulae from the Gita. Performing your duty with knowledge, with detachment. Right? So this points that we're discussing here. Then remembering Krishna to please Krishna. Right? So the bhakti is specifically these last two. The medium of it is the first three. Right? So since someone's not a devotee, he won't do the last two, but at least he can do the first three. Because if he's in the habit of doing the first three, it'll be very easy to introduce the last two. But if he's not doing the first three, then you can introduce the last two, but what medium is he going to use to do it with? You know what I'm saying? He doesn't have any idea. Does that make sense? Let us say like somebody is a very good vegetarian cook. Okay? Now all you have to do is add Krishna, and he's a great cook. Right? But now let's say he's a non-vegetarian cook. He doesn't even know how to cook vegetables. He only knows how to cook things that are sinful. Right? Now, if he becomes a devotee, then the principle of cooking is there, if you can bring that out. But his detail, he has no idea. So he has to learn all that. You know what I'm saying? So it's much more efficient if people are following the Vedic culture. And then you can convince them to take up the process. You know what I'm saying? But still, it'll keep them in the material world. It's basically still useless. It's just a medium. You know what I'm saying? You grow flowers for Krishna, and that's nice. Someone else is growing flowers for a business or for his wife or something else. So it's going to keep him in the material world. But the principle of the growing the flowers and all that, that is then going to be useful for Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? Yes.
A lot of time while preaching or the realization that people who are in the mode of goodness, it's much more difficult for them to take up Krishna consciousness because they're conditioned by the mode of goodness than a person who is just in plain ignorance, and he can take the Krishna consciousness very strongly. Of course, he might also fall back on some bad habits.
I would drop the word some.
Yeah. And a person in the mode of passion just needs to be engaged in the right way, in the right direction.
Yeah.
But while preaching, it's very hard to actually get somebody from the mode of goodness to Krishna consciousness.
That is there. But I'm specifically, how you say?
Maybe because we're not that much in the mode of goodness as a movement, that it's not so appealing to them. Well,
basically, that's the difficulty, is that you have a superior system of cooking, dress, interaction, even just sense gratification. You know what I'm saying? And in the West, when they talk about getting serious about sense gratification, they read the Indian books.
They're refined.
Yeah. So, but the problem is devotees don't have that faith. Because they say, if it's material, then I don't get involved with it. But somehow or another, that not getting involved with anything material is specifically targeted at anything Vedic. Like that. If it's Western, it's just like you breathe, so they don't even think about it. So that's what I'm talking about here in relationship with devotees. So it's much easier if one is following the system. So in other words, if you're following the process of the Vaidhi Bhakti, of the Vedic culture and all these things, and the devotion maybe hasn't been specifically awoken in a certain area, but the expertise is there, then when that does come by the process of chanting and by the process of association, then one will be very far ahead. In the social system, like you're saying, is because they're conditioned by goodness, straight karmis, much of the time it is more difficult for them because they don't see the need or the urgency. But somebody who is like that makes it easier for the devotees to follow. It's like, let's say, so many places in the world, it's very easy to get very high quality, you know, vegetables and healthcare products and all that, because there are karmis who, being situated more towards goodness in these areas, then take, make it a value and a determination to live that kind of life. And so it means you can go into now even regular, ordinary supermarkets, and they have a whole, you know, natural section and all kinds of things and stuff like that. So that's the idea, is that since the whole material creation is simply for the devotees, it's not for anyone else, that if the karmis follow the same lifestyle, that will support the devotees' lifestyle, so it'll make it easier for them. But as far as them becoming serious about it, then much of the time for the living entity, because he thinks the material world is a place of happiness and eternity, then when those two principles are generally seriously compromised, only do they get serious about Krishna consciousness. So that then is the cause of them taking it up. So that's why many times you would still see in the Vedic culture very severe situations coming up, because then that would then give rise to their Krishna consciousness, even though technically you wouldn't expect that to happen in something that is, you know, following very nicely God's laws, but just to awake up the living entity. So therefore you have this balance here, and then what we're talking in the balance is that if you can get through to what is of use in anybody's, what they're doing, like we were discussing this morning. In other words, what is actually the principle that's, the working principle that's working, either in their mode of goodness or passion or ignorance, that actually is of value? And then what of the goodness, passion, or ignorance is not of value and is actually not giving them what they're looking for? Right? So it means they want to be comfortable, they want to be progressive, but their conditioning to the mode of goodness is keeping them from progressing further. But their inclination to do the right thing, to interact with people properly, you know, be nonviolent, be, not coveting others' possessions, be in control of the senses to some degree, at least socially, you know, interactions and all these different things, those are useful. But then because now they think, because of this, I'm getting good results, I'm not getting really many bad results, therefore everything's okay. Still, it's not okay. You know, it's just like, you know, you have a big house and you're in one part of the house that the fire's not happening in, you think it's okay. You know, there's no smoke yet. You know, it's nice. But it's still, the house is on fire. So if you can take what is useful and then separate it from the parts that aren't, through that basically analytical process, then even those in goodness could be separated. You know, so like that, you have, you know, like Maharaj, Prachina Barhishat, very well situated properly in, you know, his goodness past, and he's done more pious activities than most, you know, or King Riga. So many examples of great kings who are so pious, but don't really know about the devotional. Then something comes up that pushes them into that. Then, so even though everything was so nice for Prachina Barhishat, then it's explained to him the elements that aren't nice, you know, and what he thinks is nice, it's only giving him a certain amount, and then what was going to happen? It's great, he's there, he acts nicely, his family life is going perfectly, but still he's going to get old and die. You know, so what about that? You know, so it's like you've worked very hard to create this nice situation in which you and your family and your citizens can grow up in. But what about the element that it's going to end? You know, and then what about next time? Then you got to start all over. You never know if it'll happen. So you want to. So you've solved the immediate problems, which is good. That means you're intelligent. You know, you're able to maintain it. So there's some kind of, you know, piety and some other elements. But at the same time, is what about making a permanent solution? So you do both. You know, it's just like, let's say there's an emergency come up. So you're going to deal with the emergency. You know, that's the intelligent thing to do. At the same time, as you're going to deal with a long-term plan that's going to get rid of the problem that the emergency could even come up. You know, so you're going to do both at once. You know, it's like the, in other words, you treat the symptoms, but at the same time, you're going to work to get rid of the root. Well, many people, if the symptoms aren't there, they think everything's nice. So you have to point out that's good. That you've worked, got rid of the symptoms, that's nice. But until you get rid of the root of the disease will come back. Like that. So if one can get through in that kind of preaching, then especially, you know, people who are intelligent and practical will appreciate. So whether they're in goodness, passion, or ignorance, you can get through to them, because what you're discussing is very practical, like that. So it will work. So you can jog someone from goodness, but like you say, unless it's very specific, it's sometimes harder because they don't see the need. But even that's there, then at least they don't create a bad environment for the devotees to grow up in, like that. You know, it's just like, let's say, nowadays, because they're becoming westernized, it's much easier to get goods and things that facilities that would be used to in the West. Like I remember, I was in Australia and America. It was actually very difficult to get a phone, right? Because you can get a phone that's connected to the network that's there, and that's it. There's nothing else. And you say, well, I stay in India. Oh no, but the roaming will work in India. Says I don't want to be on roaming for 10 months a year. They can't understand this. But you come to India, you can buy a phone that's unlocked very easily for basically the same price. These facilities are becoming easier here. But at the same time, as many of the traditional things are harder to get proper cloth, get proper judders, and all these different things, is getting harder, like that. So now if the people value it, then you can get all these nice things that are useful in devotional service. So that's the idea, is that even if they don't get so much benefit out of it other than just, living a more pleasant, in other words, being bound up by gold chains instead of iron or chains, but at least it makes it nice for the devotees, like that. Is that okay? Yeah. Does that make sense? So that would be there. But within the devotees, then it's also something to work with, that they become expert at our activities and all that, then as we progress, we'll naturally introduce more and more Krishna consciousness into all the things that we do. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. You had something? Okay. Okay. And this, so then, this is that then, if one is able to remove these impurities, the desire to lord it over matter, the godless attitude of being the sole enjoyer and or announcer of the fruits of one's actions, and atheism, then gradually the jiva perceives the reflection of his original form as the servant of Lord Krishna in the mirror of his consciousness. Right? So chanting, he's making the point here, is chanting technically is the only way to do this. Right? Other forms will purify the sinful inclinations. Right? They'll situate you properly more in goodness. But they won't actually get rid of the desire to lord it over matter or the desire to enjoy matter. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? So that's what's unique about bhakti. Right? And of bhakti, then the recommendation is the Sankirtan. Right? Because of specifically this age. But chanting is always valuable. Right? In other words, in the other eight, one will think it's actually four different systems. But actually, no, there's actually only one system. It's just that in the other three, that it's that main system plus another medium through which it is expressed. Does this make sense? You have Sankirtan. Then you're going to do Sankirtan, or let's say chanting, through the medium of meditation. Right? Means like we remember, what's his name? Dhruva Maharaj. He was chanting Om Namo Narayanaya. Right? So that's what he's chanting while he's doing his yoga meditation. So the holy name is still there, but the medium is yoga. Right? While in the Treta Yuga, then everything you're doing in a yagya, it's all chanting. Right? But it's through the medium of the fire sacrifice. In Dwapara, it's all chanting, but it's through the medium of deity worship. Right? But because people aren't so qualified to take up to that degree to make it into a process to become self-realized by meditation, by yajna, or by deity worship, therefore only just the chanting itself is left. Right? The other forms are there. We also there's the elements of yoga and absorption and Krishna consciousness. We do, you know, fire sacrifices, and this is part of our samskaras and all that. And we do deity worship. But they're not the prominent element. The prominent element is just the chanting. Does that make sense? Is this going to change the view on it? So it's not four separate things. It's only one. So that's why the Vedas are saying that that japa, or this chanting of how you say transcendental sound vibration, is actually the most important activity that a Brahmin can do. Right? And that rule applies in all four ages. It's not that it only is for Kali Yuga. It's all four ages. Then on top of that, you have specific duties for the age. Does that make sense? Okay, so this chanting is the only thing that actually can destroy the Purusha Bhav. There isn't any other process. No other process will do it. Because no other process is actually aiming at pure devotional service. Right? It means the others, they're either making a nice place in the material world, or, you know, as we'll say, some even say, we are material world. You know, like Vaishyasika, we're atoms. Everything's atoms. Right? Like that. So these, you know, modern nuclear physicists and all this, that's just aspects of Vaishyasika. Right? So we're either material energy or we're separate from material energy, and so therefore by pious activities we can enjoy it, or we can elevate ourselves to the level of Paramatma realization and then merge into Paramatma, or we can get ourselves out of the material world and be absorbed in Brahman. Does that make sense? So some way it's there, but that's all the farther they'll get you. None of these other systems talk about pure devotional service. So therefore, only by devotional service can you remove the Purusha Bhav, because that's the weakness in all these others that doesn't allow them actually to get into the spiritual sky. Right? Because of the Purusha Bhav. Because there is only one Purusha, and that's God. Right? Everything else is Prakriti. Does this all make sense? Yeah? I'm not talking rocket science here or something. Okay. So then yeah. So this chanting, that or devotional service, and of that the focus is on chanting, it's the only thing that will actually get rid of this material desire. Right? This desire to lord it, control and enjoy the material energy. And, yeah, does that make sense? So that's why it's then therefore very important. And it's focused in this way. Okay. Samkirtan, in the next heading, Samkirtan extinguishes the fire of material existence. This material existence appears to be pleasurable and sweet, but in reality it is like a fire in the depths of a forest. Such a fire can reduce the entire forest to ashes. The faithless non-devotees must constantly tolerate the excruciating burning pain of the flaming forest fire of material existence. But when Lord Krishna's holy name is congregationally chanted in full perfection, the devotees, even though they may dwell in the material world, are never scorched by those flames. Right? Because it's means this fire will come in the form of the desire and the needs of the material world. So then one has to work to get those. Right? So, yeah. And because of that, then it's actually very painful. But because happiness is defined as removal of pain here. Right? That's how it works. I have a need. A need is a pain. Like I'm hungry. It's actually a pain. So by eating, I remove the pain. Technically, it's not something positive. You know what I'm saying? I'm actually just removing the negative and bringing it to neutral. And I call that happy. Right? I have a need. I need this particular item. And I'm always absorbed in it. So when I buy it and I acquire it, then that need has been taken care of. So then I say I'm happy. Does that make sense? You know, or even for the impersonalist, the need to get out of the material world. So when they do that, then they're called happy. Right? But it's still, it's all negative. You're only bringing it from the negative up to neutral. It's not positive, yes.
And in, like the example you gave about eating, so you bring it to neutral, it's called happiness. And then if you take too much, again, it goes into pain.
But oh, that's there. Yeah.
But what's the actual experience of happiness for a living entity, like while eating? Is it just the absence of pain, or is it the interaction with the senses of the sense objects, or what's the actual...
That's the need.
Technically speaking, it's not actual pleasure or happiness or joy. It's just absence of pain.
It's basically, because there'll be many things happening at once, especially the more developed it is, the more it's like, okay, you're hungry, but then let's say someone's more sophisticated, or even if they're not, there's a certain thing they want to eat, like that. So you have two things happening at once. The act of eating, removing the hunger, and that what you're eating is what you actually need to eat, you know, in your mind. Oh, I want to eat this today. And so then getting that, you feel happy, because even let's say I can't get what I want, the stomach, the pain of hunger is being removed, but I'm still not happy because it's not what I wanted to eat. You know, or maybe it's what I wanted to eat, but it's not in the environment I wanted to eat it in. You know, I went, I got the thing, everything was nice, and then something went crazy, and so I couldn't eat it in the environment I wanted. So as the person is more sophisticated, there's more aspects of his need. Like that, it becomes more refined. So sophistication technically means more need, but it's more refined. You know, and then... they generally have more of a balance between them and all those, so therefore they're sophisticated. So all those things, you're removing all those different aspects. So therefore it's not actually positive. So, but the appreciation of Krishna, you're taking Bhishad and appreciating, you know, Krishna's taste of it, this taste of it is Krishna, that's positive. That's real pleasure. You know, so we see in the Prasad Seva prayers, you know, Lord Chaitanya is, you know, Krishna... Shakori Ashwadan, Krishna Premi. Oh, I can't remember it so long ago. Yeah. Well, he's saying that he says Krishna's eaten it, but he says by tasting this spinach, you'll taste love of God. Yeah, Aishi Premi. What is it? Okay, been a long time.
So that appreciation of Krishna is not dependent on what you're eating.
No, that's why the devotee is never bothered by material existence, because whatever Krishna sends, he's happy with. He may be accustomed to something fancier, but if Krishna sends it, nice. If he sends it, it's just comfortable because that's what he's used to, that's his habit. But if he doesn't send that, it's still Krishna's taking care of it. So it's, you know, it's just like the child's going with the parent. And so they're in the house, so then they eat what's in the house that they're used to. But you're out, let's say, traveling on a bus. You get whatever you can. But still, the parents are taking care, so that protection, that safe environment still is there. You know, but the food and this and that may not be exactly what you were, you know, be the most comfortable with. But it still works because of the relationship that's there.
So the more one is on a transcendental platform, the less it depends also on what one is eating.
Yes.
But many times we see that devotees are quite sickly because either they eat the wrong foods, or even if they have sufficient good food, because the mentality is wrong, yeah, but they try to get the wrong experience out of it, so they're causing themselves more harm.
Yeah. That's why the culture is important. Because the culture will teach you what to eat, when, how, what's the environment. Like I think Charaka mentions 8 different disturbances that come from overeating since you made it. One, hard to breathe, all these different things that goes through. You know, you can't sleep properly, you can't, you know, so many things are there. And then he explains what is proper, you know, what's the proper environment, the eating, you know, how the services, what's the mentality, you know, what kind of food, all these different things. So then you can understand is that if you know the science, that you'll be more able to take advantage of what's there. Plus, because
the Vedas always give that kind of like broad range, because nothing's ever ideal, then you can always get the best out of whatever situation you're in, like that, because you actually know what's important. We may think, oh, it's the eating. No, it's the environment. It's the interaction. So if you're with friends, it's the interaction that's more important than what food is there. Like that.
Where is that described?
It's one of the chapters in Charaka. He explains it.
Charaka
Samhita. It's one of the Ayurvedic texts. I would think that it's probably, I'm not sure, but it might be in Dinacharya, which means like daily activities or things like that, because it'll explain why one does what one does, why one takes the bath in the morning, you know, a cold bath, why he eats at certain times, why he does everything the way he does, like that. That's called Dinacharya. You know, Dina means day, and Acharya means, you know, your activity and all that kind of thing. So that. Is that okay? Does that make sense? Yes.
You mentioned that the chanting is the only mean to remove this desire to regard it over the material nature.
Yes.
At the same time, one side we have our chanting, and on the other side we have our service. And is this, so our service is like
it's part of the, that's what makes it Samkirtan. Because it means, it's like, what are the Brajbasis doing? Are they sitting down and just chanting Krishna's name all day?
No.
No. They're always chanting Krishna's name, they're always absorbed in thinking of him, they're always trying to please him, but they're doing it through some kind of medium. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, that doing activities for Krishna is the standard nature of the living entity. And they can do these other things, always hearing and chanting, remembering, at the same time. Right? Because of their consciousness is full, it's complete. So they don't get distracted. So in the material world, therefore, that principle works here. It's not a problem. So then, one is doing one's japa, one's own sadhana in that aspect. At the same time, one is doing preaching or activities to support the preaching. And so then everything works. It all goes together because it's the same kind of nature in principle of what they do in the spiritual world. Detail may be different, right? But the principle of being engaged in service connected to Krishna for his pleasure, right? Favorable service for Krishna's pleasure. That's going on there and here, right? And according to your, so what happens is that's their spiritual nature, right? Means that is their original spiritual form and their nature, so they're doing activities in connection with that for Krishna. While here we're conditioned, so we have a conditioned nature, but the same principle of taking your nature and engaging that in Krishna's service, it's the same. So technically it doesn't matter whether you're engaging your spiritual nature or your material nature in Krishna's service. The principle is the same. Right? Because if you engage the material nature in Krishna's service, then technically you're not dealing with your material nature anymore because it's not your nature. It's just what is comfortable to work with. Does that make sense? You know, it's like Mother Jashoda, for her nature, is going to be more comfortable in a house with a nice outfitted kitchen than going out and trying to cook for Krishna under a tree somewhere. You understand? So it just fits, so it's comfortable. So therefore, our conditioned nature, there will be certain requirements that are just comfortable. But the idea is that they're completely connected to Krishna. So the principle is the same. Now, if you don't have a conditioned nature and you're in the material world, then basically you can just focus, like Haridas Thakur, on just the Bhagavad, just chanting and whoever you meet talking about Krishna. You don't need to use a conditioned form, right? You don't need to use all the elements of the Varnashram because you have no need to fulfill, you know, other than Krishna's pleasure. So Therefore, that will look like it's something completely different. Does that make sense? So that's the...
All those different services that they have, it's just like the same sankirtan, but in a different medium.
A different medium, yeah. But it's just a matter of what... It's just like, okay, someone has to go out and distribute the books. But now having distributed the books, you know, they need to have a place to rest. They need to have some proper food. They need to have, you know, a nice association and a nice environment. So that means people need to cook, need to clean, need to do the deity worship, need to manage the temple, do all these different things. And then so it all goes together. You know what I'm saying? Each one's dependent on the other. But you see your service in connection with the whole. Then it becomes complete. That's why I'm saying Sankirtan is complete. Right? Like that. So, does that make sense? Because then it's you can be a pot washer and still dynamically engaged in the Sankirtan mission, because you understand these pots will be then used for cooking for Krishna and the devotees, and then they'll be able to do their services. So if you keep nice, clean pots, Krishna's going to get high-quality cooking. Because if the pots are dirty, then the standard won't be very good. Krishna's not going to be very pleased. No one's going to be very happy. Right? So therefore, your washing of pots is very, you know, useful in the Sankirtan mission. Right? So if that's where your expertise lies, that's what you do. Now, let's say you've washed pots, but you have other aspects of your nature that you could engage in Krishna's service, but they weren't available because of the contamination. But now, having washed pots for so long, now those are starting to come up. Now you could do other things for Krishna. So that'll just it's just a natural progression if it's there. So whatever is needs, that's how much it requires. Does that make sense?
And when because it's also recommended to increase one's absorption in direct chanting, direct worship, and like this. And when it's more prominent to increase the direct engagement rather than the absorption and service.
The point is direct and service, they're both service.
Yes.
So what do you mean by direct?
I mean...
There's five... Do you mean the five main items of devotional, of the 64. That is whenever that's available, that's what you do. But I'm saying most of the service that we do is connected with those anyway. You know what I'm saying? It means you have your chanting, so that's there. Association of devotees, that's basically going on all day. Hearing the Bhagavatam whenever we can, and we're hearing and chanting, you know, like that, and studying and like that. Then the worship of the deity, much of what we do in the day is connected with the deity, if you want actually understands deity worship. Because connected with deity worship, besides your job, is the ija, worship of the deity, is your getting up in the morning and preparing yourself to go to Mangal Arati. That's part of the deity worship. It's one section out of five. Right? Then you prepare paraphernalia, so even if you're just a cook and never worship the deity directly, right? That's still part of the thing. Or you make garlands, or you make outfits. These are all the upadana, or paraphernalia required in the worship. Right? Then specifically the pujari goes in and he does yoga and ija. But at the 16th item of the 16 items of deity worship, then the 16th is all these things that basically everybody else does. Like accepting charinamrita, taking darshan of the deity, circumambulating the deity, smelling the flowers, taking, you know, does that make sense? All these kind of things. Offering one's service to the Lord, surrendering to the Lord. These are things that everybody can do. Right? And even in yoga, worship of the spiritual master, you know, abhigamana will include cleaning the temple. Like that. Then in the last section, the fifth section, Swadhyaya, then in there, that's called study. So that means the actual gaining the understanding and practices of devotional service that are supportive of the deity worship. Because if you worship the deity but don't do Swadhyaya, the deity doesn't take your worship very seriously. Right? So Swadhyaya means is you're going to, you know, chant your japa, worship of Tulsi, taking care of guests, associating with devotees, honoring prasad, living in the dham, and studying the books. Right, so what we're doing here, this is part of the process of deity worship. In other words, these five aspects all go together. So if you're taking deity worship as the prominent one, you can't perform it without doing the other four. You know what I'm saying? If you're not chanting, if you're not preaching, if you're not associating with devotees, means those who know their devotees, or those who don't know their devotees as guests, you know, worship of Tulsi, worship of the Dham, honoring prasad, then your deity worship's not complete. So we see as most of our lifestyle is all connected with the deity worship. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Our lifestyle is pancharatrik. The thrust of that is the Bhagavat. But because we're not necessarily situated on that platform being conditioned, therefore Bhagavat takes the form of pancharatra. Right? In other words, Bhagavat means you're always absorbed in serving Krishna, hearing and chanting about Krishna. Right? And so pancharatra is formalizing that into the deity. You know what I'm saying? The cowherd boys will get up early and take their bath so they can go when Krishna is being woken up. You know what I'm saying? So that's what they do. You know, but they do it spontaneously. They don't have to be told, okay, now you're a cowherd boy, so therefore you have to get up before Krishna with enough time to take your bath, you know, say Hari Bol to your mommy, and then go to Krishna's house before he gets up, or just as he's getting up. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's what we have to do. So pancharatra does that for us. Right? You should be up and ready so when Krishna gets up and comes for darshan, you can see him at Mangal Arati. Because that's what the Brajvasis do. Right? Does that make sense? The gopis are seeing Krishna, you know, at Mangal Arati. They're the ones that actually see Mangal Arati. You know what I'm saying? Then Mother Dashoda is there and wakes him up first in his room. After he's woken up, then the cowherd boys will see him. But everybody's seeing him right there in the Brahma Muhurta. And everybody's gotten up and taken their bath first. You know what I'm saying? So that's what the Brajbasis do. So since we're not doing that spontaneously because of our natural affection, you know, I mean, in other words, this rag atmika or rag anuga position, we don't know what we're supposed to do, so therefore it's given to us in the form of vaidhi. You know, and we think, oh, why I should do this because devotional service is above the rules. Yes, devotional service is above the rules, but unfortunately we're not. You know, and when we do come to that platform where we're above the rules, that's because we already naturally follow those forms that are in line with or supportive of the rasa that we have. It's not rasa bhas. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the rules prevent rasa bhas. The rules ensure that some degree of rasa is going on. You know what I'm saying? You know, there's a rule. Don't touch the deity in the dark. Do you like to be touched when it's pitch black and you can't see anything? You're sitting there and suddenly somebody touches you? You know, you don't like it. So therefore, there's a rule there. Don't do that. So when you go in, you have to light a lamp first, then you touch the deity. You don't just go in and touch the deity. You light the lamp first. You know what I'm saying? No one likes to be woken up suddenly, therefore it's done pleasantly. You understand? So all these rules are there. Right? Krishna brushes his teeth, cleans his tongue, washes his mouth. Then the next item, if you're being very technical, is you show him a mirror. Right? Because if you're in the bathroom that has these mirrors, you go in there, you know, half dead, you brush your teeth, this, that. But once you've rinsed your mouth in that, then it's like, okay, here I am. Right? Where does that come from? Because that's what Krishna does. You know what I'm saying? So all those things that you would do, those are put into the worship. So you understand is that he's a person, the reason you do it is because he does it. Right? The reason we have to brush our teeth is because Krishna brushes his teeth. Krishna brushes his teeth, cleans his tongue, rinses his mouth, right? Washes his hands, washes his feet, right? Then takes a bath. Does that make sense? So, because he does that, that's a lifestyle he leads. If we want to be with him, we would live the same lifestyle. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is that the spontaneity is there. So it comes to us in the form of rules. So it's simply trying to establish the same kind of lifestyle that they do in Braj. Does that make sense? So since we're conditioned, then that works very nicely for us. Even if we're not conditioned, if we're preaching, we will generally take the role of someone who's conditioned. Right? Rupa Goswami mentions that even the Uttamadikari, he takes the mentality of the Madhyama that he's preaching, and he makes those distinctions between, the pious, the impious, the devotees and the Lord. But he presents himself as a neophyte. Right? His consciousness is Uttam. He takes the service or position or perspective of the Madhyama, but he presents himself as a neophyte. Right? Does that make sense? So even in that, still they'll take a form. Right? Because you are a person, you have your likes and dislikes anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it all works. So that's why Samkirtan is used, because it's that complete in all aspects, all places, that one is absorbed in hearing and chanting the Lord's glories. Is that okay?
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi
Go
ahead go Generally, it's because it's actually the main Ayurvedic treatise. It's considered the main. Then there's a whole bunch of other sub ones that are. Then there's Shushruta, which gets more into its specialty is surgery and stuff that generally Charaka doesn't do.
Relevant to
what you say. Charaka would be the main thing from what I can see, but there's a lot of stuff in there. You'd have to ask Vagisha. It's very big. It's got 10 sections, but of it, the much less used. Yeah. It means as we go, this class will turn into that. We'll go through all that. Because now we're going through philosophy.
Yeah.
And when we finish all the philosophy, then we'll go through all the 14 books. Like that. Just what's the essential points in them. So even if not, we'll get to that. Like that will come up. Yeah, yeah. I mean, in other words, basically 1 year we study philosophy, and 2 years we study the Vedic literatures. So that way then one has a real strong foundation in the philosophy and the culture and all that. Means essential points of philosophy. And Gita and the morning class, it gives us the specifics and, exact details.
So he wouldn't know which parts of Charaka are relevant?
No.
But he would know where it's there.
Yeah. You would only know that, but what form it's in, I have no idea. But otherwise, you give it by next year, we should be going through it at some point, yeah. Next year, the year after, whichever.
Small question.